And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So that's it, lads. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has confirmed this morning that outdoor gatherings more than 500 are not permitted. And the GAA is expected to deliver a statement today. Tom Ryan did deliver that statement, but he kind of pushed the boat on a little bit to this afternoon, said he's going to meet with the government. I don't know what they have to meet about, because they've been very clear about gatherings more than 500 not being permitted. Schools have been cancelled, creches have been cancelled. We had Ger Brennan on the football show saying the universities are obviously cancelled. He's off work as of now. Brian Carroll, you've got your feet up there. You've a pina colada in your hand and you're taking it easy. You're off work now for 2 weeks, at least 17 days.
Yeah, we're scrambling now to put plans in place for the kids over the next couple of weeks. But look, it's a big worry, I suppose, for the Leaving Cert kids more than anybody. Wondering will the Leaving Certs go ahead or anything. But look, they'll definitely go ahead all right. But how much actual school or contact time that's going to happen over the next number of weeks, it's very hard to see it, being honest.
Well, that's the thing I was thinking. Like, I mean, 2 weeks. What's 2 weeks going to do? Because the incubation period is 2 weeks. So in 2 weeks' time, you know, like, cases will have either exploded or they'll have receded, but there will still be cases. So reopening the schools in 2 weeks, to me, is completely illogical anyway. So we could be looking at a more extended kind of break.
Yeah, I don't see that happening, being honest. There's, like, on the official holidays, there's only 1 week of term left in 2 weeks' time until 2 week Easter break. So I can envisage that it'll be closed for at least 5 weeks, being honest, until after the official Easter break. And they'll obviously have a much better idea in 5 weeks' time whether it'll be able to open then or not.
Yeah, Jesus, it's hard to know, isn't it, Cheddar?
Yeah, and it's a bit disappointing, Willie, to be honest with you, because it's not as if there hasn't been precedents around the world on this. Yeah. You know, I mean, we all know this. We don't need to go over this in terms of. But look, this has been going on in China for a while, in Italy for a while, and I do agree with Brian. I don't see schools being back before the summer break, Brian, to be honest with you. If we look at the other countries and where they are and the length of time it has taken to contain this, and I suppose it's not just containment now, we're in aggressive measures now to actually curb it. And, you know, it's only in the last couple of days, and I know you cannot compare like with like here in terms of where it was in Wuhan in China, and in fairness, we don't know enough about it to be able to comment on it. But if we just look at it at a very, very high level, it's only in the last couple of weeks that numbers started to recede. That's been there since December. That's, what, 3 months ago? So I can't see it happening, and I have a huge amount of sympathy for Leaving Cert and exam students in that. You know, it is a pressure time for them, and, you know, it is the gateway to their working life and all of those things. And I think we should all sort of look out for them and do the best we can for them. And Brian, I'd be interested in actually, you know, I know the teaching practice and process and all of that has moved on an awful lot now to online teaching and all of that. And is that an option in schools? And I don't want to go on a separate adjunct here on the show, but I wonder, is that an option in schools?
It is an option, but it's a lot more difficult to actually carry out on the ground, because there isn't a huge amount of investment in ICT, and obviously ICT in people's individual homes. So it's not really the done thing at second level. It is an awful lot more accessible in third level. So you can see why the likes of Trinity and the other universities now are moving towards an online platform and being able to deliver their lectures through Skype or whatever other medium they're able to. But in second level, that access just isn't there at the moment, and the investment hasn't been there. And I suppose it's something that hasn't really been tapped into. While there's an awful lot more done in terms of providing notes online, many different platforms there, the actual delivery of lessons hasn't really been widely used at second level. So it is a big issue. And even, you know, the department are slow on actually bringing out guidelines in that perspective as well. The current directive is actually just to prepare work for the next 2 weeks. And a lot of that, on a very, very, I suppose, macro level, is just to be able to buy time and see where they're at over the next couple of weeks and try and figure out what the long-term plan is from that perspective.
Yeah, it seems to be a buying time kind of measure. Definitely from a GAA point of view, the Dublin County Board have cancelled all all club fixtures. Antrim as well. Who else was it, Brian?
Meath.
Meath have too. Look, these lads, the big question here is there will be no supporters at games this weekend. I think that's very, very obvious. The government have said it, Cheddar. It's whether these games go ahead behind closed doors or not is probably the question. And are we looking at the welfare of players by asking them to play, or is it high risk? You'd be looking at two squads of 30. You'd be looking at, you know, a lot of them not intermingling, only the players on the field kind of, you know, coming across each other. Yeah. And not all 30 coming across each other. Is it a player welfare issue to ask them to play, or would it be okay to go behind closed doors for another couple of weeks and run off the league?
Well, I think, Uli, my answer to that is don't answer it, because I'm not qualified to answer
right.
it. There's a huge amount of issues here. Clearly, we've moved away now from containment measures into aggressive measures, which is not dissimilar to where maybe Italy is. So we're really only just going on people on the outside commenting on this. I think there's been a huge amount of people commenting on social media that are very unhelpful here. So I'm not going to give a huge amount of comment on this. But I'll just say this of what I know. Look, there's a lot of issues here. You know, even in terms of jerseys, water bottles, there has been advice given down by the GA yesterday about the use of water bottles. And
bring your own one, yeah.
And bring your own and different things like that. But look, there's a whole lot of other issues here as well. I was speaking to somebody yesterday who were at a training session, and a player took off his top and wiped his nose and then handed it over to somebody. He didn't think what they were doing. You know, totally innocent here. But there's a huge amount of issues here that just haven't been looked at. And you know, what are the issues? And, you know, this is much bigger, Uli, than player welfare. We've all friends that are in this critical 6%. And we've all aged, you know, I'm past this now, but an awful lot of GA players have aged parents. So you may be all right,
yeah.
And you may go away and play, and you may go and train, but what are you bringing home? And they're the critical people. And I'm gobsmacked, to be honest with you, Woolley, that Tom Ryan's going to speak to the government, because I'm going to be very, very straight here. The government have flip-flopped around this already, and we're going to go to them to look for advice. Why can't the GAA take the lead in this and stand up on their own 2 feet and say, we're a community organisation here, and we're going to help out our own community, and we're going to look at what we can do. But this is a threat to Irish people and to the people that are around us. What can we, as an organisation that prides itself in being a community organisation, do for the area that's around us here, rather than running to a government and looking for advice on this? And, you know, I'll copper fasten that, Willie. We spoke last week here about the medical people that we trust within our organisation. Let's trust those people as well and give the advice to us, and let us all, you know, put the shoulder to the wheel here and sort this out on behalf of our society.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I do think that people individually need to accept responsibility as well. So people listening to this, if you're planning on going slobbering around Dublin, around packed pubs all day, Paddy's Day, and the parade might be cancelled, but like, I mean, you're not doing anybody any good, and the point Cheddar made is that you'll be fine, you're young and you're fit, but your parents might not be fine and your grandparents might not be fine. And if you're happy to live with bringing that back into your house because you want to have a good weekend out, you know, on the beer, yeah, slobbering, that's
absolutely
on you. That's on you.
And that's the point, sort of, William, I'm making, that we are a community organisation. We can get that message across brilliantly. And we can go that step further. You know, this, you know, clearly looking at the evidence in other countries, this is going to get worse.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to get worse quickly. And it's going to be, you know, a serious critical risk to a fair cohort of people, you know, pretty close to ourselves here. You know, can the GAA, you know, not weigh it? Why are we waiting for flip-floppers here who didn't sort out the problem in the first place? And look at this ourselves and work together on this. And for example, in the bigger picture, what's the bigger picture here? There's going to be need for distribution of medicines. There's going to be need for distribution of food. We all know aged people around the rural areas. We know where to live. We can do the survey within our own club areas to find out that. How can we help? I even go in even a stage further. You know, we all obviously have friends on the HSE side. And we know some of the things that they're looking at the minute in terms of isolation units and chambers, and they're looking at different locations of that. You know, are our clubs' houses suitable for that? You know, these are extraordinary times.
Yeah.
This is not just something that's going to pass, and it affects everybody. So I think we have passed Woolley. You know, you asked a question and you introduced this topic around can we play behind closed doors. I think we need to look at the really, really big picture first as an organisation and see how can we help. And then we need a plan around our games and a plan of how we can contain it within our own team training or what, you know, whatever activities that we're about.
Yeah.
I don't see it at the minute and I'm disappointed about that.
Yeah, just get out of the denial stage, which I was in for a long time, looking at China thinking, ah, this will never happen to us and this will never... The reality is you just need to look at Italy and we're a few weeks behind Italy, and if you think what happened in Italy won't happen here, well then you're living in a dream world and you've got no cup of tea. You just have to acknowledge
though that the initial three county boards have made a big decision
very
there.
Quickly
and
they,
they've taken the lead on it.
Yeah,
and I that's where I would agree with Cheddar in that and express his disappointment at the GAA of kind of almost pushing it to this afternoon, and fair play to those county boards and any other ones that are making those decisions independent of the GAA.
Yeah,
and you know they're making that for the vast majority of people at the coalface, you know, the people at the clubs, and you know you would expect that the GAA have to do the same for the inter-county game. That has to cease as well. And, you know, it'd be very, very disappointing if you see, you know, county boards at a much smaller level making these decisions and no club games are played and no trains allowed, but the county board, you know, or the county teams are allowed to continue to play and train. Like, that just doesn't seem to make any sense whatsoever. So you would hope that by the end of business today that the GAA will have followed suit.
Agree with you, Brian. And again, I'd like to come in behind you, Brian, and I'd applaud those three counties for decisive leadership on this problem.
Yeah, very good.
Definitely.
To change the subject to a subject you won't want to talk about, Brian, we have to talk about Offaly Antrim. And Jesus, that was some, you know, kick in the arse for Offaly to play so well and be ahead and look like they're going for a good result, and to be hit by two goals in injury time like that. Like, number one, that's probably their own fault conceding the goals, but there is a talking point after the game was the 2 minutes extra on top of the six that the referee played. Now, I was reading a couple of tweets since Monday's show, and people were saying it's good enough, didn't they? They got an All-Ireland in 98 for because extra time wasn't played. And now they're giving out about more time being played. But the point is, and this is a bugbear of mine, Brian, and we haven't spoken too much of it on the hurling show, but I covered it extensively on the football show, is the extra time that referees add on in extra time. And it's completely disproportionate to the extra time they add on in the normal 35 minutes. So in the normal 35 minutes, there might be 6 minutes added on. But then in the 6 minutes, there could be 2 or 3 minutes added on, almost half that time.
Yes.
And my point is that referees are stopping to watch much more in the extra time than they are in normal time. And players aren't sure what's the clock being stopped for in the extra time and what it's not being stopped for.
Yeah, I was on RT on Monday morning actually talking about this, and this is far from sour grapes, trust me. You know, Offaly were very unlucky. They looked to have done everything right. They'd only conceded 5 points in that second half, only one from play, and Antrim played with the wind. It's a harsh lesson for them to lose and hurl to the final whistle. And for the vast majority of people at the game, they acknowledged that there was a couple of stoppages during the additional time that led to the 78 minutes being played. But the issue is that the only person in the ground, whether it's in Croke Park or O'Connor Park or wherever, if it's in a club ground, the only person that's in the know is the referee.
Yeah.
And that's not good enough in this day and age, especially when we know in other sports, and even here in Ireland with ladies football, we can see that there is a clock that is used, the stop clock, and everyone knows in the ground how long is left and what you're playing towards. And I just find that really frustrating that the GAA have buried their head in the sand in this regard. And it's something that I would love to see them trial. They go on about trialing loads of things, and this is a real thing that needs to be introduced. The referees come in for huge criticism, and this is one where we can actually help them so easily and take that onus off the referees so they can concentrate on the field of play and any indiscretions that are happening there and the rules of the game without having to worry about the time. And, you know, at least there's clarity for players, management, supporters. And, you know, you stop those situations where you almost feel like referees are playing for a draw. Because that was this sense, you know, after the game today. We saw that in the club football, I learned. We saw it in Dublin Monaghan in the National Football League, where you just feel like the referee, look, he's going to give him one more chance. Do you know? And if you have that hooter or whatever way you want to describe it, like in rugby or whatever, you know, at least everyone's in the know, there's clarity about it, and as I said, it's very simple fix for this sort of thing.
It seems to be, and it works pretty well in the women's. I don't watch that much of the women's game to know how well it works. It only seems to, you know, the ones you see it are in the big All-Ireland finals, which, you know, you watch. But there is one thing, Cheddar, against the stop clock, and I would be for it, is that you're just after watching an unbelievable All-Ireland, say Kilkenny and Tipperary in a classic, and there's a point in it and the time is about to run up and Tipperary have one more attack and everybody in the whole ground knows that this is their last attack and the buzzer goes off as the puck out. Do you know what I mean? Where you'd love to see them getting that one chance.
Can I cross that one for a second? Because to me, there's a simple fix in that, and it's like what rugby do. It might go beyond the 80 minutes in rugby, but it might go beyond the buzzer
until
the ball goes out of play.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a simple fix on that.
Fair enough. That's answer that one, Cheddar. That does seem fair, because there would be something kind of unjust about someone shooting for a point to draw an All-Ireland final and the buzzer going off.
Yeah. I think there's pros and cons for it, Willie. I think the pros far outweigh the cons. It works brilliantly in ladies football, and it actually adds to the spectacle, and as you're coming down the straight, you know, it certainly hypes up everybody, and there's you know, great buzz around the place because people know where it is. And I fully agree with Brian. The problem is not that there's 8 minutes. The problem is that people don't know, and particularly players don't know, and everybody doesn't know, and then everybody's hyped up. I think it was quite clear what time was left. Even if it was 10 minutes, that's not the issue. The issue is that, you know, where do I stand? What can I do next?
Exactly.
The one downside I would see to it is that, you know, if it's quite clear where the finishing line is in terms of the clock, you know, it may introduce a little bit of cynicism towards the end of the game. But look, you certainly, I don't want to go back to last
week.
That's
happening anyway.
And Brink and the black cards and all of that crap. And thankfully, enough of people spoke against that.
But it's funny, Cheddar.
That's the one point I would make about it, Woolley, that, you know, I think if, and Brian's right, look, it could be looked at and people could trial it and speak to the LGFA referees and, you know, just see how they feel about it. Certainly, I think the pros far outweigh the cons, but that's only one that I might see.
Yeah, it's funny, the women's game, it just stops, doesn't it, Brian? It's just like they're on the attack and it just stops. There's something a bit heartbreaking about that, though, isn't there? And almost like demoralising for the team. There's 20 seconds left and they've a kick out and they almost know we're not going to even get the ball down the field at this stage.
It's almost like the American football where they nearly walk across the field and shake hands.
If there's 10 seconds left and you're after getting the ball in your own full back line, she might as well drop the ball and shake hands. You're gone. In hurling, you're okay. I'm thinking Gaelic football.
But the one thing I see in ladies football sometimes is that there might be a bit of keep ball towards the end of a game.
Yeah.
But you kind of seen that creep in football, in men's football teams will hold on to it, where that's not really possible in hurling. It's very high risk to have that keep ball situation.
Yeah.
And I don't know, they just seem to hurl out to the whistle anyway, even if you are getting hammered. They still seem to play it out. So that would be the only thing. But I just think it's something that can be trialled. And I do think that little fix of until the ball goes out of play, I think that's a nice way of actually trying to counteract that thing you're talking about.
I'd agree with that, Brian. And I think the other counter argument, Willie, you have 60 minutes to go win the match. It's not winning the last minute.
Yeah.
You know, people need to accept that as well.
Okay, brilliant stuff.
And I think it would take pressure off the referees, Brian. I meant to come in behind that point.
Yeah.
I think anything that takes pressure off the referees without taking away their power to referee the game. And I don't think that the timing of the game has anything to do with it. I think a lot of referees would be delighted if that was actually done.
Yeah, and I suppose the big televised games are the ones that would be, like, this wouldn't be done in the club games. They would just continue on as normal.
I don't see why you wouldn't, Brian. I don't know your view on that, but I don't see why you wouldn't. This is not, you know, there's no great expense on this. This is just simply putting up an electronic clock that people can see around the stadium.
And an operator, I suppose. Yeah, in the county grounds. Yeah. It could be done.
But for most big games, whether it's club or county semi-finals, there's a fourth official there anyway. So all these big games, it's easily done. You know what I mean? The one thing as well in rugby is it's stopping at 80. You never know how long the game stopped for. You know, that 40 minutes that we're talking about in the second half, that could have ran for 50, 55 minutes, you know, with all the stoppages in rugby. Whereas in hurling, I think the issue is that we're looking at it going, oh, it's 6 minutes extra time. That's a joke. You know, that kind of way. And
I get you. Yeah, you never know what extra has been played.
You never know what it is.
Clock
it's just
stopping.
It yeah, the clock stops and you're playing to the 80, you're playing to the 70 in hurling and football, obviously.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't have that issue of it's a disgrace to play 6 minutes extra.
They've a lot more patience, rugby supporters. You'd be watching a scrum there and it collapses and then they'll all set up again and they'll go lock again and then that falls back down and then... I'm not sure.
There could be we're getting them in rucks though in hurling.
Yeah, well, throw it in again. Yeah, they could say that about the hurling, right? Antrim Kerry lads is in Croke Park. That's a nice little touch for Antrim and Kerry, not to rub in the fact that Offaly aren't there, Brian. But 1 o'clock. It's before the Dublin and Meath game. So again, a nice experience for them, Cheddar, and a nice little reward.
Yes, and you know, I've said it a number of times in the last couple of years that playing in Croke Park, particularly for these counties, you just didn't get a chance. Incredibly, I know when I was involved with Leash, I think Matthew Whelan had been playing with Leash for maybe 10 years at that stage, and had given unbelievable service. And I actually don't think he ever played in Croke Park, with the exception of getting back there last year. So it is a great thing to do. You know, it's our national stadium. Every Gaelic player, and certainly every county player, should have the opportunity of playing there at some stage. And I think it is a good big boost. But I think it's much more important than that, Willie, to be honest with you. That sort of things that you would expect from your players. But Kerry and Antrim, if they're going to build on where they are and going to come into, you know, a Leinster Championship, if you have real ambition about yourself, you know, you're going to have to decide, I want to get in and play in Croke Park and I want to go in here at the top, and that may be a Leinster semi-final or something like that, or, you know, whatever it is. You should have that ambition about yourself as a team, and they're certainly developing teams. It's going to be an interesting game because, you know, I think Kerry were knocked back a little bit there recently. They were missing a couple of players, missing Shane Conway. Brian, you might correct me if that was in the Offaly game, they were missing Shane Conway, but they were certainly missing...
No, it was actually the Kerry Antrim game.
Sorry, Kerry
and Antrim beat them.
That's correct. 6 points. Yes, that's the match. I'd expect them that they're back at full strength now, and, you know, Kerry have improved year on year, and, you know, that game's going to go down to the wire.
Yeah, definitely. And like, I mean, the credit I want to give to Croke Park and to the CCCC or whoever fixtures them or makes the fixtures is that last year I think they had Westmeath and Kerry down in Cusack Park in Ennis.
That's
and
correct, yeah.
On a terrible day. And like, we give out about them enough to say that to put that on in Croke Park before the Meath Dublin game, it's a very good thing that they've done, and it's a very logical thing. And sometimes we give out about them for not being logical, and gives the 2A or the 2B teams the credit that they deserve.
It certainly is, and I have to say
2A, sorry.
Yeah, no, 2A, but fair play and very lucky. Brendan Cummins was on Sunday League last Sunday night, and he highlighted it first and foremost. So, you know, whether the CCC were going to do it or not, the pressure was certainly on them to produce when Brendan Cummins came out with that statement on Sunday night. So, again, credit where it's due. The writing is done here, and you know, they deserve their opportunity to play in Croke Park. And I remember you did an interview with Joe Quaid after that league final last year, and he was very scathing of that. And as a show, we were too, you know, because the Division One final was in Croke Park. I know it ended up doubling up with the football final, but, you know, there was nothing stopping a triple header that particular day as well, because, you know, all the football finals tend to be in Croke Park. So, you know, I think it's only right that they get their opportunity. So, fair play on that one.
Yeah, exactly. So this final talking point has been a bugbear of mine anyway, so I want to hear, because Don Logue Cusack has thrown another kind of side of it, and maybe it's him I should be arguing with, or it depends and see what you think of this. It's like, I've been complaining
I think you'll know the answer to this one.
I've been complaining about this National League, lads. I've been complaining for the fact that managers don't seem upset after the game. There is a lack of intensity in a lot of the games. There's nothing seems to be at stake. There's no relegation issues for any of the big teams, you know, and it's just lacking something. And it's the second biggest competition, and it runs for 2 months, and you'd like to see more at stake. Now, Donal O'Cusack last week on League Sunday, he was asked about that, and he said, "Is that not what the league should be? It's your secondary competition. Look at it from a playing point of view. The skills are no less. The players are enjoying it. They're expressing themselves. It does suit the management. You can blood players. You can get ready for the championship. Who are the other key stakeholders? The media. They don't seem to be talking any less about the game. If you judge by the amount of podcasts that are out there talking about it, the crowds, he said, I don't know the exact numbers, but I don't think they are down. The interest is still there. That's another view of a cheddar. It would be complete opposite of my view on it. Like, I mean, the way I look at it with Donal O'Cusack, and that's okay, this is only new. If this league continues like this in 5 years' time, will people start getting bored of not top level sports? Something has to be at stake. Yeah. Or else it's the Walsh Cup.
I think for this year, Donal O'Cusack is probably right in some of the things he says, but it's still a slow bicycle race.
Yeah,
it's turned into a slow bicycle race in comparison to what it was for the last couple of years. And there's no argument about that, I think. You know, I think if Donal O'Cusack was asked, is this flat to the mat for every team in all of these games in comparison to the way it was for the last couple of years, I think he'd have to be honest and say, no, it's not. And, you know, I think his answer more or less says that, you know, if it's a secondary competition where, you know, managers blood players and so on. I think the big argument was with the top teams was, well, we didn't have a chance to blood players in the last couple of years because it was flat to the mat.
It's so gone from one extreme to
the
other.
Let's just be honest and call it for what it is. It is a slow bicycle race at the minute. And, you know, people need to be wary. You know, is that going to, charge up, people's interest in the games and so on? You'll always have diehards like myself who go to two or three matches a week, and you know whether they were playing backs and forwards, they'd still probably go to it. But clearly, it's not to the same level, and it brings it back to the question, Willie: why was the decision made in the first place, and how come four or five of the top counties could force this based purely on the fact that we're asked to be super competitive here in the league, and now it's detrimental to our championship ambitions a little bit later on in the year? Pure and simple, let's not hide around that fact, because they actually said it. And it was hugely detrimental, of course, to Westmead this year, for example. I think, again, look at the bigger picture here. And Donal O'Cusack, you know, maybe you were asked a straight question and you simply answered the question. But look at the bigger picture here in terms of the development of the game. And if it is a secondary competition, it's not a secondary competition to develop the game in the top 5, 6, 7, 8 counties. It should be a competition to develop the game maybe in the next 6 counties, and with a view to maybe having a 12 or 14 or whatever we decided it to be a championship from here on in. But, you know, let's not hide behind that this is what it is. And certainly if you look at some of the matches last Sunday, that, you know, there were of no consequences. Waterford knew they were in an All-Ireland quarter,
yeah,
or in a league quarter.
He made a load of changes.
And that's fine. You know, if I was a manager of Waterford, I'd love that, because you have an opportunity of looking at some players and all of that. But the bigger picture here is, was it competitive to the extent that, you know, it mattered? Well, yeah. Clearly it didn't.
Yeah.
Now, look, you could still have that situation in even the previous years. You could still have that situation, but it was certainly an awful lot more competitive, and games really had a consequence.
Yeah, but you look at it, Waterford-Limerick was more of a reflection of the 5 games before that, or the 4 games before that. The one that actually did count for something was Galway-Tipperary, Brian, and that was a clearly much better game with something riding on it. And you could clearly see the difference in a game that had something riding on it and something that a game that didn't have something riding on it.
Oh, 100%. And look, being honest, I was extremely disappointed when I heard Donal O'Cusack come out with that.
Is he cheerleading to the point there where he can't even see what's very obvious to people?
We see, yeah, look, I don't know. We come at it from a different base, I think, on this show. We probably see the bigger picture because we come from counties that are not the traditional powerhouses of the game, and we see the importance of trying to grow the game in every county. I honestly, and I've said this a lot of times, the analogy I keep using is they are climbing the ladder and pulling it up after them. That's my issue with it. Of course it suits the bigger teams where they get to experiment and have the players. Do you think Laois and Carlow and Westmeath got to experiment? They did in their eye, you know, like they were flat to the mat in every single game and probably were still shipping big beatings. We've said this time and time again, the previous league worked really well. 1A and 1B, and the 1B had almost a mini league within it, and we would have had a fantastic league there between Laois, Westmead and Carlow, I think, there. you know, fantastic the way it was. And I agree with you. I think there has to be something on the line. I don't care what level of sport it is. You know, and it's not just hurling here. You know, there has to be something riding on this. And it is disappointing to hear comments like that from such a big person in the game. You know, and it's a very narrow view, I think, on where the game is and how we can continue to grow the game in every county.
It is, yeah. And like even a comment like the skills are no less, the players are enjoying it, they're expressing themselves. Sure, that could apply to a puck around in the park. Like, I mean, this is the National Hurling League.
Sorry to come across there as well. Like, my issue on that is, there was no counter argument on that. That was, Donal O'Connor finished that whole conversation on RTE, and it was a very, you know, very one way view on that, and that really frustrated me that he got to sit there and say that. And you know, a lot of people can take that as gospel almost. You know, so I was really frustrated hearing that.
In fairness, there are time restrictions to give Joanne, you know, her dues, that she wouldn't be shy about pulling people up and things, but like, it is difficult on shows like that to potentially take something on if you're wrapping up.
No, I agree. My legs should come in there, Brian, on that. Really what Don Logan's saying is, look, Westmead, you'll be cannon fodder in this, and it'll be somebody else next year and somebody else, because it'll never be us that's going to go down to 2A ever again. That's what they're really saying here. So, you know, we can do how we want to do here, and as Brian has captured it perfectly, we can pull up the freaking ladder behind us here and the hell with the rest of you. We'll chuck you around the place as cannon fodder here just to keep this thing going.
Yeah, okay, pulling the ladder up after yourselves in a slow bicycle race. They're the two takeaways I'll take from this National League. All right, we'll come back and we'll look at some of the games.
We have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep, and we have a few donkeys as well. So we had a couple of filly donkeys, so I brought them down, and so we actually sold them to, I think we had four donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford. So we did. So there's the piebald donkey still there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey.
You see them on the beaches, and so you can actually, one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them, because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your bonuses, your grants. A donkey in Eden, a donkey in Eden Palace.
All right, lads, the quarterfinal that we want to start off with is Wexford and Galway. This is in Wexford Park. Arguably, it's hard to actually pick which is the bigger of the two games, because the two of them are very big games in their own right. Three Leinster teams, only one Munster team. I don't know what we say about that, because the two Munster teams are waiting in the semi-final. So we'll start off with Wexford Galway anyways. And like, I mean, Brian, I don't know how impressed you were with Galway. We were talking about it here on Monday, myself and Damien, but there was a very clear, obvious game plan. Two-man full forward line, lovely diagonal balls, get it in early. Well, obviously in the second half when they had the wind. And because there's no Johnny Glynn, there's no Joe Cooney, this is the way Shane O'Neill now has seen the players he has available to him, and this is what he's come on. And we saw a bit of a pattern to their play.
We did. And look, we actually spoke about this 2 weeks ago and seen, would they actually target these home games? And that's exactly what they did. And, you know, they brought a lot of their players back into the fold over the last couple of weeks. Mightn't have played all the game, but you know, they've seen game time now over the last couple of games, and as you said, a pattern of play has started to emerge. And you know, it's a very enticing one from a Galway perspective. Look, we know they've players and loads of them. When you see Brian Kilcannon, though, really, I know he's been there the last couple of years, but he's really starting to put his hand up now. Conor Whelan coming back into that real imperious form as well, and you know, they can be a force to be reckoned with if they can get everyone on the field. You know, so Shane O'Neill would be quite happy now with the way that league has worked out. I know the fixture being changed, the Galway Tipon ended up being two home games in a row. That really suited them. And they will be happy now having drawn Wexford down there as well, because it is a dry run from Shane O'Neill's perspective. I know the players might be used to it, but from Shane O'Neill and his management backroom's perspective, it's a dry run for the way it's set up in the championship as well.
Yeah, Davey was at the game, Cheddar. So, like, I mean, the one criticism here I had of Tipperary on Monday was, how the hell did they look at the two lads inside destroying them for that long? And Paddy Maher was trying his best to get back, but he was playing an orthodox centre back position. We know Davy's not going to look at that. He's had fair warning, and it's going to be a 3-on-2 situation for the two lads in there.
That's what's going to be really interesting about this, I think. I think the other interesting thing was that, you know, Galway didn't play with that third person. Oftentimes they played with maybe four along the half hour line. From what I could see, it was not the game. So that's going to be interesting. I think, you know, looking at the mix of their forwards, they seem to have got a good mix, but they're definitely going to play, you know, it's going to be, you know, pick the pass type play rather than just lump it in and work off a target man and that. But they have, you know, I think Brian Concannon has proven himself to be, you know, a tough individual as well. You know, he certainly will fight for ball, and Conor Whelan, you know, my God, what a work rate and what bravery and toughness. I think, Brian, maybe you spoke on this last year, or somebody spoke on this last year about his strength, his just natural strength and his ability to be able to, you know, take tackles, give tackles, ride tackles and so on and so on. But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting as well that, you know, how will that work? You know, so if that's a diagonal ball, they're going to have to clear a sweeper. So now does Glynn and maybe Concannon play a little bit wider? You know, where does that ball go to? Because you need to be very precise and you need to be very clever about, you know, the lines that you bring the ball up. You know, do you bring it up along the left sideline? You're going to have to bring it a little bit further now to pop the ball over the sweeper because that person's just going to be stepping back to mop that up. And the other side of that is if Wexford win the ball in the full back line, they have an outlet now to carry the ball out of it, and that you need. So you're the person that you're playing out in the half hour line, or somebody in that half hour line, needs to be really, really quick to jump on the sweeper coming out with the ball, because Wexford are not going to let that ball go. They're not going to belt it up the field here. So, you know, Galway are going to have to up, I suppose, the basic plan of what they're doing, but equally, you know, Wexford are going to have to figure out what they're going to do with that as well. And, you know, bear in mind the two of them are going to meet in the Leinster Championship. It is a little bit of a dry run here, and I think Shane, you know, could do with the extra games. And, you know, Wexford's team is pretty well set. The way they play is pretty well set. Of course, they're going to do some little different things just to throw the opposition off their tail and that. But, you know, you could probably predict reasonably what their team is going to be like and how they're going to play it and how they're going to play. Not so with Galway. And I think Shane probably maybe needs, and, you know, winning brings momentum. We spoke about that a number of times on it as well. So I think extra games will be helpful to Galway. And, you know, clearly they've the bit between their teeth. They set out. There was a sense of purpose about them last weekend about going winning that match. It's just hard to judge it, Wally, because, you know, I'd say Tip had one foot on the plane. I don't know, did somebody tell me they were heading for a week in Spain for training?
They went on the Monday. I was saying actually to Damien on Monday that last weekend was supposed to be the quarterfinal weekend. So they were actually going flying out. Did they have any intention of being in the quarterfinal then? Do you know, were they going to go for a week before a semi-final like Limerick?
They were. I mean,
they were planning on doing that.
These things are planned months in advance, Willie, obviously.
Maybe Liam Sheedy was like, lads, if we don't make a quarterfinal, it's not the end of the world. We have that week, you know, away or whatever. Like, and Tip looked like a team right throughout the league that didn't give two hoots whether they made anything.
They may have, Willie, but they weren't beaten by a whole lot in a lot of games. You know, they were very, very close in a lot of games, so they could have very well ended up in the quarterfinal. But I just make that point. They're a very, very experienced team with a number of All-Irelands now under their belt. I don't think you can sort of switch on and switch off, but if any team could do it at the minute, they can do it because of that level of experience. But it is a little bit risky, but they have a very, very experienced management and a very clued-in management and a team, I suppose, a management that the team have great confidence in at the minute. So I have no doubt that Tip can turn that around and go again.
Yeah, they weren't a clued-in management with that two-man full forward line for the whole of the second half.
They may not have need, you know, don't.
There could have been an element of they're actually just letting it ride.
Correct, yeah, yes,
and seeing how they managed it on the field without actually counteracting it. So there's a lot of chess going on at the moment, and I agree with what Cheddar's saying there, definitely. You know, a lot of these results do come with a little asterisk beside it.
Yeah.
You know?
Come here, Brian, just on the point Cheddar made, and he said where the diagonal ball is coming from, you might need to work it up a bit further. And I think that's a great point, and it's something I'm always saying. If there's hang time on the diagonal ball, it's not a... When I say diagonal ball, I mean a good diagonal ball. If there's hang time on a diagonal ball from a right half back off down into the far corner forward, that's not a diagonal ball. When you say a diagonal ball, you mean it in a complimentary way, not in the literal way. Yeah. A diagonal ball is a low trajectory pass that a sweep, it goes so fast and over a shorter distance that a sweeper can't get across to get the break, yep, to get the break off it. It's in the far, as Damien says, the 70-30 ball.
70-30, yeah.
Can Cannon all of a sudden now look like he was able to win his own ball when that wouldn't be what he'd known for? It was because of the quality of ball. And that's something, like throwing out diagonal ball all the time, I think it's misleading into what Limerick do, brilliant diagonal balls.
Yeah,
you know, do you get me? Kind of actually throwing diagonal ball out for the sake of it because it goes across the field. I don't like that.
I think I fully agree with the point you're making, and there's probably no need to elaborate on that. But the thing for me, for Galway, that struck me in that second half was that as a group of players, and particularly the forwards, they put their hand up to say, you know, we can do this, and probably we can do this without Joe Hanning if needs must as well. Because that is one stick that I have done it myself, that Galway have been beaten with over the last, you know, while anytime Joe's not available, they have looked, you know, rather toothless up front. You know, and as I thought, as a collective, they really put their hand up in that second half. And I thought they scored a couple of great finishes. And I heard a lot of people being, you know, given out about Brian Hogan in the goal. I actually thought, particularly Cotton Mannion's finish, I thought that was a brilliant finish. And anytime I've been coaching, I've been trying to coach forwards to do that. Hit the near post. Keepers expected to go across them. They're almost gone. They take that step almost instinctively to go across. And there are certainly opportunities to hit it at the near post. And I think Cottle Mannion did that absolutely perfectly last Sunday. And just the glide across the ground, because Evan Ireland threw him out the hand pass, and it looked like he might have been covered, but Manny just put the afterburners on, and without even looking like he was sprinting, just tore away from the couple of Tipperary defenders. So I think, yeah, as a unit, that Galway forward line put their hand up. And the other thing I've noticed in the last couple of games is they are certainly attacking with more intent in terms of trying to get goals. Mm-hmm. If they get the ball inside that 40 metre zone, they're not taking the handy tap over points. They seem to be putting the head down and actually trying to work goals.
Yeah, it's an interesting that he's had to devise a system around having smaller, less ball-winning forwards, Cheddar. Like, it's not, but Shane O'Neill's had a difficult job. Now, we're not saying they're the finished article. Mm. They just looked very good in the second half, and you could see a pattern to their play that suited their forwards, and all the things that would seem obvious to us talking on the show here seemed to be kind of coming to the fore.
Yes, but again, you know, I'd urge a little bit of caution about that, Willie. You know, it was a serious test.
True.
Certainly Wexford will be a serious test here. Look, you divide your game plan around the players, not the other way around. And look, this is what he has. You know, I think what Brian's alluding to there is, in that way of playing, where does Joe fit in if he's a forward? That will be interesting, you know, because he certainly has to be fit in somewhere. So look, that's going to be an interesting one. I would just again maybe urge another little bit of caution that, you know, Galway have had a number of these type of players over the last 20, 30 years, you know, superb, quick stick men. And for some reason or other, just the whole, you know, part just didn't click for them, and haven't won All Irelands. You know, they've had this, and they've shown this a number of times before. And I'd throw one other little thing: they had their own problems in their own full back line as well early on. You know, so they're certainly not the finished article by a good bit, and we're judging that playing a Tipperary team that, you know, weren't really full on for the game anyway.
You're wondering. I suppose the one question about Galway, while we're calling it a bit of a compliment at the start, if they start coming under pressure, who's their ball winning forwards then? Like, you know, Brian, like, I mean, who could they, if Skehill wanted to stick a bomb or two, like, usually you want a few ball winning puck out catchers in your half forward line. They don't seem to have them obviously now.
Yeah. Well, look, Joe Canning obviously is as good in the air as anyone. Cotton Mannion on his day. You know, Jason Flynn's been playing half forward as well there at the moment. You know, you've Niall Burke didn't start the other day, so like they have big men. Do you know, so Conor Whelan's obviously
maybe Mannion using his pace not to land it on top of him, but to put it in front of him, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. And he's brilliant to catch the ball out in front of him. Look, he's so tall as well. You know, and his pace and moving on to the ball. So yeah, there's alternatives around it. And yeah, like there comes a time where that just have simply to win their own ball, and it's about getting numbers. You know, you actually mentioned that their full back line had their problems, and they certainly did. It's just interesting to see Adrian Tuohy over the league has been playing out the field, out around midfield. And we know that he played, I know he was probably a makeshift, but he played a corner back when they won the All-Ireland, you know. So it is interesting to note that they have maybe pushing some of their players backwards to try and shore up in the full back line. I know Grod McInerney is playing full back at the moment. It'll be interesting what they'll do with Dottie Burke when he returns. So again, they've loads of options. You know, Sean Loftus has been there or thereabouts over the last number of years, so it's just about nailing down you know, a spot. They've played Park Mannion on the half back line. We know he used to play in the full back line, so you know, as I said, Galway have options in abundance, but it's about getting, I suppose, all those players fitting into a unit and trying to actually work together.
Yeah, but the half-back line looks settled. Mannion with Cooney, Burke, although Cooney went off injured. Damien reckons Morrissey, the cornerback, is a very good player. So it looks like he could be getting back in. It is starting to take a bit of shape. Wexford have got a good few injury issues. Lee Chin, hamstring. Conor McDonald has an Achilles issue. Rory O'Connor, hamstring. Paul Morris, hamstring. So Davey says the four players mentioned haven't participated in full training. Brian's laughing already. Now, well, to be fair, Rory O'Connor was taken off against Carlow after 41 minutes. Conor McDonald came off that day as well, and Lee Chin didn't play at all. So there might be, I know exactly why you're laughing, but like, I mean, we know that Wexford, Davey doesn't hide from this kind of stuff. There's no shadow boxing with Davey. Davey wants to win the league, and he'd love to set fire to Galway coming down. You know, so there's no doubt of what Wexford are going to bring to this, whether they have their full team out or not, Cheddar. I don't know if you're as cynical as Brian.
I know. I think some of them are clearly injured and have been for a while. It's not just for this game. But I do expect them all to be coming back now. They're probably all in rehab programs and so on. I think some of them have played some hurling already. I've got some game time on them. And you know, clearly David would want to be getting them, you know, together now, because look, there's only whatever it is, 8 or 10 weeks left of the championship. If it does go ahead, let's just take everything's going to go ahead here for the moment. And even though, look, they have their style well refined. I think you'll see some little additions in that from Davey and some more creativity within their team. Not a huge change in their setup, but you sort of need all of the players training and that to actually do that as well. Incidentally, Willie, you spoke up about the Galway half-back line, and I'd be a little bit concerned about that. I think Shane Coney and Fintan Burke are two big players. And look, Wexford could be the team to test them, because, you know, Wexford are going to drag you around the field a lot, and their half-hour line are going to be well out the field at different times, and then you could have a wing back scooting up the field past you, and suddenly you're completely out of position. I think of those six backs, they obviously need to start out the full back line after last Sunday, but even if they did, they started to depend a little bit on you know, being tight at the back and being cohesive at the back. And of course, when you're playing Wexford, that's in the exact opposite happened, because you're dragged around the field by different players. And you know, what do you hold your formation back there, or do you go man to man, or what do you mark space, or do you mark go zonal marking, or what do you do? And it's an interesting argument, or an interesting discussion, because certainly for up to maybe about a year or two ago, everybody would have said, keep your wing backs back, protect your corner back. But I think the quality of hurling has gone to such a level now that I'm not so sure that you can do that anymore, because people are able to ping accurately now 40, 50, 60 metres. So you holding the people, a wing back in front of your half back line, may
it's
very
not going
well,
long.
You may be in no man's land, like the war zones. You may be in no man's land, so you're doing nothing here. And I think the idea now, when you look at big strong players as backs, I'm not so sure you will see 2 and 4. And I think Kilkenny are trying to do this at the minute. They're certainly looking at 2 and 4 being very, very mobile, because they've been caught out a couple of times with, you know, fantastic corner backs, but not quick enough to be able to play a bigger area in front of them. And, you know, traditionally you would have said, and, you know, when you look back at the All-Ireland where Callan, and even look back at last year where Pat Horgan got out to the side, and that diagonal ball, that real precision diagonal ball that you were talking about, which is difficult to mark on the outside of the forward. Like, if you don't have really adaptable, flexible players that are very, very quick and very, very quick to get out of that ball first and then go front foot and actually start the attack, you know, you're now dependent on keeping your wing backs back, But, you know, that I'm not so sure that that's going to be an option anymore, the way the game is played. And just the, I suppose, the dynamic running of different players around the field. And I think hurling is going to change a lot over the next couple of years than what we have known it.
Yeah, that's a good point, Brian, that you leave your half-back line in position and that's to cover your full-back line, but your Wexford don't be launching them in anyway, so now you might be a spare part, and Wexford will just send their two cornerbacks that have ended up, you know, being spare, they'll send them up into the fray. So now you've got, you know, players marking a full forward line that it's not going to come to, and Wexford have extra men out the field who'd have no problem tapping it around to.
Yeah, and Wexford are unique that way. They do pose a completely different problem than most other teams, because the majority of other teams, while they might hold on to possession and all that, they do still play along the lines of an orthodox type of game. You know, Wexford have it down to a fine art, you know, and Paddy Foley's, you know, he, and I suppose Matthew Hanlon, when he's playing halfback line, as you said, they're breaking up the field. It's absolutely killing them, you know what I mean? And, you know, their sweeper is not necessarily your seventh defender either. You know, they're getting up there, the cornerbacks are getting up, so it's very, very hard to counteract that. I've watched Limerick, you know, so closely. Obviously, they're the team to watch. They tend to leave their half back line in place,
yeah,
in situ,
they do,
and even their full back line as well. They seem to be steadfast in that. Now, the onus obviously there is on their half forward line midfield, drop deep, even sometimes leaving a 2-man full forward line, but and everyone filters out.
But
the
Brian, I suppose if Limerick are playing a Tipperary who are trying to get into their full forward line all the time because that's their strongest line, yeah, that makes sense. It all depends,
yes,
I suppose, who you're playing against.
That, but that's why I think Wexford are so, I said that at the outset, Wexford are so unique in this perspective.
Yeah.
I don't think any team out there at the moment is as probably far down the road of evolution of their game in terms of you know, that spare man around that middle third as Wexford are, and their ability to hold on to ball, their ability to get different shooters in play, and that, you've said it yourself and you said it to Davey, those defenders running from deep, very like football. You know,
yeah, he didn't admit that, did he? He didn't.
He didn't really, but I think because you were putting it out there for them, I think. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Shane O'Neill said after the game the last day, he said it goes back to what we've been looking for the last couple of weeks, just to have an unreal work rate, and I think the work rate was there again. And if ever that rings true, it's against Wexford, because you're tracking lads that don't have the ball, and that's the hardest thing for forwards especially to do, because your instinct if someone has the ball is to run after them. If he doesn't have the ball, your instinct is not always to run after them, and I'm sure in hurling, where these tactics are new enough, it's even less so.
Look, the work rate, I think we've heard that since Adam was a chap.
But Galway aren't
that's
known,
clearly given.
Galway aren't known for that hassling and harrying and tracking in groups like, say, Kilkenny are.
They were known, and their club hurling is really built around that.
But the senior, the inter-county team.
But I think the crucial thing there is the quickness in transition from you being an offensive player to you being a defensive player. And you know, that we're talking about actually tracking, and that's when you're on the ball and off the ball, I think is where it really, really is. And of course, if your players are dynamic, they're moving up and down the field, you're not really, you know, you may not be marking somebody, but you better be able to cover that person. And, you know, there's huge movement and mobility around the opposition team. How do you track them down? Because you're able to ping the ball. I mean, Brian's on the show here, no better man that can pick the, you know, he can pick a pass 40, 50, 60 metres easily. You simply cannot leave, you know, players off like that. So you may very well be attacking yourself and the ball is turned over. Now you're in the defensive mode. Mentally, how quick are you to get into that mode? And who are you going to close down here? Men up your own man. So that quickness in transition from being an offensive team, attacking team, to being a defensive team, and you're going to do that 300 or 400 times in the match, I think that's where the real coaching and that's where the real game planning is.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Who do we fancy in this one then, lads, just to finish it up? Cheddar, I'll start with you.
I think, look, the game's in Wexford Park. I think it is important to Wexford, on the assumption that they have players back and that those players back are, you know, good to go. I'd like to see a little bit more evidence about Galway. I just don't judge last Sunday's to a great extent. I thought they were put under pressure by a team that proved in the second half not to be really up for the fight. And if that was the case, I'd be a little bit concerned about that. I think Wexford are in their own park, are in their own support. And I think, you know, Davey will see this. You know, let's get one over Galway. This has served Davey well. And incidentally, Woolley, he's been a vilified person by enough people. So let's compliment him here, because Brian used a very, very good word. The evolution of hurling. Nobody has done it better or done it more than Davy. And you know, fair play to you, Davy, and I certainly will compliment you on that.
Yeah.
But one other thing has served him well. I think he's beaten Kilkenny 5 times out of 6 now. I can't remember the statistic. But that's important to him in terms of self-confidence and self-belief in Wexford against a team that traditionally, you know, would have been a challenger to them. And surely Galway are serious challengers for Leinster and for All-Ireland. And what better way of just, you know, keeping them down than to beat them again next Sunday? So I'm just going to give Wexford a hesitant vote. But, you know, it's qualified a little bit by that they have their proper team in the field.
Right, Brian, what do you think?
Exact same, have to agree. Every single point on that. I'd go with Wexford too, you know, considering, you know, that they have all those best players available to them. They mightn't see out the game. I think that's one thing that Davy has clearly worked on over the last couple of years, is trying to strengthen his panel in terms of having a 20-man team, and players come on and they're very, you know, they're not letting the tempo drop, you know, that kind of way, and very used to the system that they play. And I think he's certainly a long way down the road to achieving that. And I think that's what makes Wexford so dangerous at the moment. David didn't like it when I said last year, but I he's a terrific competitor and he wants to win every single game, and particularly at home. And I think he'll go for this bald-headed. Galway still have a little bit to learn as a collective under Shane O'Neill. So it is a big, big, big test for them down there. And that's why I said I think they're very happy to go down there and actually learn from this. So yeah, I'd be the same as Cheddar. I'd definitely pick Wexford on this one.
All right. Okay, I don't know who to pick, so I'm just not going to pick anybody here. So we'll come.
And Willie, I'll just throw in one other point. You know, in hindsight, Wexford must be, you know, absolutely kicking themselves that had a great chance of winning an All-Ireland. Absolutely kicking themselves. And, you know, if that hunger is still there and they can get all of those parts together, and this is nothing to do with Davy, this is intrinsic within Wexford players themselves. You know, they've won an All-Ireland in 96, and, you know, they haven't, even though they're a huge hurling county with a huge support, but they haven't won a huge amount of All-Irelands considering the heritage that they have. And, you know, so this is not going to happen for them every year. Although I spoke here last week, you know, Wexford 365 will guarantee, it's a development plan of Wexford, will guarantee that they're going to be at the top of the tree here for a long number of years to come. But they haven't. And if they can maintain that hunger and just, I suppose, use that to drive themselves on, we were close, but look, close does nothing for you. We've got to go in and do it all again. If they have that hunger and they decide next Sunday that, look, let's make a mark on this game because these boys are, you know, we're going to be taking on these boys in the summer again. You know, let's keep them down here, which I think is what Davy has really said to him in comparison to, you know, when they're dealing with Kilkenny. And I think that might be a point that might tell for Wexford as well, that type of hunger.
Okay, great stuff. We'll come back and we'll talk about Kilkenny and Waterford.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. Beans. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
All right, Kilkenny Waterford, Brian, you're in doing co-com for RT on this one. Like, I mean, this is a local derby. The big news is that the Ballyhale Shamrocks lads, TJ, Joey Holden, I think he was on the bench, Colin Fennelly are all going to be back. I think Joey was on the bench for the last one. Kilkenny at full strength, amazingly, outside of Adrian Mullen.
Yeah, and it's a fixture that both teams love. You know, there's a great rivalry down there. A real healthy kind of respect between the two of them, even though they're obviously on the border. I suppose they don't come across each other that often, but they love to play against each other, whether it's in Walsh Park or in Nolan Park. And I think both teams would be really looking forward to that. You know, particularly those Ballyhale players, so that's why they'll be mad to get back in. And they're obviously geographically close enough to Waterford, so they'll be mad to get involved. But Waterford under Cal now, under Liam Cal, they'll be, you know, really up for this type of fight. You know, he made changes last week in terms of his giving a, probably a run to some of his panel to see how they would deal with the All-Ireland champion or All-Ireland or league winner, sorry, Limerick, the team to beat, really. And he was very honest in his probably his analysis of the game afterwards, and literally just said that Limerick were just a step ahead of them. And you know, while they only won by a few points, it was almost a comprehensive win.
It was. Yeah.
And I suppose the big thing from that is that they probably learned a huge amount from the way that Limerick play. So, you know, it's interesting times for Liam Cahill. He's certainly set out his stall. He's not in terms of. Like he's not afraid of names, you know. Players have to earn their right to get a jersey. So there's no one coming into that Waterford setup, no matter what they've done in the past. They have to earn that right to get a jersey, and that will come through hard work, I think, first and foremost. And I know it's a given, and Cheddar kind of said that earlier, and you know, hunger and all that sort of thing. But you know, you have to still get it out of players, and I think Liam Cahill's a long way down the path of actually achieving that. And I think he has set his stall out early in that, and we're starting to see that in players, and that's a lot easier said than done.
I looked at Waterford against Limerick, Cheddar, and you know the way you watch Galway and you can see what they're trying to do. And like, I'm not a hurling analyst, but you can see a pattern in their play. You look at Limerick and you can tell after watching two games because you can see them practicing what their game plan is and phase of play. You look at Wexford, might take you a bit longer to figure out what they're trying to do, but then you can see, I look at Waterford and I don't see any pattern of play. I see huge endeavour. I see lads trying hard. But I don't see a defined game plan. I see Jamie Barron taking off on a solo run. You see, you know, Prendergast taking off on a solo run. You see whoever gets on the ball, Montgomery going off on a solo run, whoever's there. But you don't see what the actual plan is, or am I missing something there? I know they didn't have a full team out against Limerick. But what are they working towards, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I actually agree with that, Ollie.
Here we go, I'm retiring now. That's it.
I haven't seen enough of them. I haven't really seen enough of them, I suppose. But I wouldn't be surprised if Liam, maybe decided to take this in steps. To get the work rate as Brian was saying, and that real level of effort and that cohesion in effort. You know, working for one another and covering for one another and so on. Maybe just to take it in small bites. Let's get this thing right first. You don't know his thinking behind these things, you know, because he left a few players off the team that, you know, he has made some statements about that, you know, he had a clear vision of what the type of team he wanted. And, you know, in saying that, he's also saying that the players he left off were left off for that reason, I'm presuming. So it may very well be that, you know, he's just maybe step one along the way he wants Waterford to play. But I think he needs to find that pretty quickly, because you know you only get your first chance to impress here, and he's going to go into a Munster Championship. And if you don't have some idea the way you play in the modern game, I don't want to call it a modern game because it's just a game. If you don't have some method of play, it's difficult to see how you're going to take down the likes of Limerick, Tipperary, Cork, and Clare. You know, it is a dogfight. It's a bear pit down in Munster, as it is in Leinster. I'll say. You know, we've said this over the last number of years, that it's really looking forward to the championship. It is going to be neck and neck, dog eat dog here. And, you know, it is going to be that in both provinces. But we're just talking about Waterford at the minute. And I think, all of the things that that Liam has said, is, you know, he's talking about Sunday, that's a do-or-die game and a good test of where we are at. All of these utterances so far have been very much around that, the effort and that, well, you know, without a huge amount of, you know, the setup and the way they play and the method they play and the way they transfer a ball and all of that. So I think he's going to have to give some time to that soon to get a method of play that suits his players and that suits Waterford and that. And I think the crucial part of that for him is there's certainly a lot of very, very good players. He has a really, really good panel available to him here. But just getting the right type of scoring threat and the right type of scoring forwards in place. And a lot of these players, you know, Curran and some of these have been tried before. But it's going to be interesting to see the likes of, say, Desi Hutchinson and some of those players. He had a few more new ones again, as you said, Wooly, last weekend. But have the ability to be able to step up in white-heated championship and, you know, influence the game seriously realistically for your team? That's going to be the question. And probably, I think this Sunday is really, really important to him for that. You know, because clearly Brian has expressed it well. A huge amount of South Kilkenny people work in Waterford, and you know, there is a great healthy rivalry there because they're in different provinces. They don't meet that often, so that rivalry is not, maybe it's not bitter, it's healthy, I would call it. And you know, the game's in Nolan Park. It is going to be a great test, but I think it's going to be a test really. You know, you just take it for granted that at intercounty level, where Waterford is, that the level of effort and fight and all of those things are just, it's just going to be top notch. You know, if it isn't, there's something seriously wrong. And it's the next, it's the creativity within the team and how you play and all of that that I think will be interesting. And there's no better team to test that than Kilkenny. And you know, we've said it's number four. They're tackling their ferocious fight to win possession and to win back possession and all of that will test an awful lot of things to do with your team. And I think, you know, it is going to be a very, very interesting game. There's no doubt. And, you know, taking, as you said, Kilkenny have some players coming back that are, you know, serious heavy hitters here. And if they are back and if they're right, it's going to be a fantastic game.
Yeah, I think it'll be a tough day at the office for Waterford.
Willie, one other thing. You've got to bear in mind, Waterford were in a league final last year. We sort of forget that.
Yeah.
And you know, they underperformed when it came to the championship after that. But no team gets to a league final without serious credentials. And, you know, they have it. And it's a matter of getting the right parts of the jigsaw right. And, of course, getting that motivation and all of those things right. But they have some serious players.
They have some serious players. But here's the thing, Brian. Do they have a full forward line that's going to put fear into the opposition? Patrick Curran, unfortunately, a great underage player, but probably consistently hasn't done it. Desi Hutchinson hasn't had an unbelievable league. He's been injured the last game, but I think he will be a summertime player. Stephen Bennett, like, he looks like he's their marquee forward now. He scored 3 from play against Cork, 2 against Limerick, 1 against Galway, and he got 1-1 against Tip. That's not Shamie Callanan kind of, you know, I know it's not unfair to compare him to Shamie Callanan, but you get me, your heavy hitter in the full forward line wants to be racking up a bit more than that. So who are their ball winning half forwards? Like, do they have any big physical players in the half forward line? They all seem to be small little fellas. I don't know, I think Waterford are in bother for personnel, because when he played Austin Gleeson, he played him centre back. Kevin Moran's in the back line. You know, you'd think that the two of them would be two good ball winning half forwards. I see them in a league quarter final, and I don't know, you just don't see where they're going at all.
Look, I suppose a little
am I
bit
being overly harsh here?
Yeah, look, I think a little bit of balance on that is probably needed, being honest. You know, you have to give them credit. They won a couple of really tight games against Cork and Galway at home. They were down to 13 men. Okay, it was 13 against 14 against Tipperary. They put in a hugely brave performance that day. And you know, they ran Tipperary close. You know, Limerick, okay, hurling-wise, they beat them probably comprehensively, but still there was only 4 points in it. So that shows the endeavour that's there at the moment. I think the two teams that stand out for me at Waterford at the moment is that Cal has done. Number one is that work rate. And as I said, he's not afraid to leave big names off. And he's forcing them to hit the wide road. Here's the, if you want to go the easy path, well, you're not for me. But if you want to roll up your sleeves and work your arse off and do whatever it takes, and you know, well, then come on board. So he's not afraid to make those decisions. And that's tough, you know. That's very, very brave in his perspective. But he's willing to do that. The other thing I've seen that stands out is that they're clearly trying to work goals as well. If they get a ball, they're putting their head down and they're absolutely going ball-headed for that goal. It's not always working out. Sometimes that does come down to the quality of the player that you're talking about, you know, those real marquee forwards. But I can definitely see a clear pattern there that they're putting their head down and trying to go for goals. And they're seeing the importance of trying to get goals, because they have not worked those opportunities over the last couple of years. So that is important. But you're right, it's hard to see how, when you pair it all back and you look for like with like, how they actually stack up against maybe the top intercounty teams here at the moment. And results have shown that over the last couple of years, you know, and that opens up a completely different argument. They have not won a game in Munster since it's been changed around, you know. So it's a big, big year for them in terms of that Munster championship, and you know, they have to get a win out of somewhere. And I suppose I hate, like, look, it sounds like we're always agreeing with each other, but I think Cheddar hit it in nail on the head. It looks like Liam Cahill has set out his overall plan with Watford in steps. You know, first and foremost is that honesty of effort, and within that, then when he has got that and got real honest players on the field that he can bring in his, you know, his game plan or evolve that game plan as he goes forward.
Okay, right, Brian, we'll let you go there, and thanks very much.
No worries, lads. Thanks a million. Talk soon.
Cheddar, but like, I mean, at the same time, can you not instill honesty of effort into a team as well as something else? Do you know what I mean? Why does it have to be one or the other? Or why do you need to go in phases? It's a long year.
No, that is interesting. And even the fact, Woolly, I mean, there's another discussion around, players that don't have honesty of effort, can you get insider heads to change them rather than just discarding them? So there's lots of discussions around that. Either one could work. There's no guarantee in either of them. But you would probably say that the really, really great motivational managers can get inside people's heads and, get them to change their behaviours to play in a different way or to do the things that is going to improve them as players and that. And at the end of the day, that you're a manager, that's what you're there for, to improve players and to improve your team to go away and win something. But I don't want to miss the point either that sometimes you do need to make statements here. Clearly Liam, I think he actually said that this was based on the previous years, I think was one of his comments. So clearly he either knew something or his management team knew something within the fabric of the team that needed to be changed, that needed sort of surgical work on it, and he has certainly done that. But I suppose the results of all of that will really be in the performance, particularly in the Munster Championship and that. I just would worry a little bit about that, Willie, about that whole forward division. And first of all, the incisiveness of their players, in the real top games. I think they've got working forwards and that, but you need a little bit more now in Munster at the minute. Look at the level that you're taking on. You're taking on the All-Ireland champions, the league champions. And as the lads said about Cork, or most rooms, they could come any year, they can do anything. Yeah. I know Clare under Brian will be difficult to beat as well. So it's not that you have a chance here to find things out. He, Waterford public will be unforgiving for Liam Cahill if they go the same way. They won a league last year and didn't perform in their first match, and then just couldn't grab, the motivation within the team to really drive and go at this again.
Were in a league final, you mean?
In a league final. And that could happen, quite easily again. This is not a Waterford team that's just after coming out of minor under 21. They're absolutely at the peak of their power. If it doesn't happen for them now, you'd be a little bit concerned about that. And I just go back to that point. I suppose if you had a TJ or a Pat Horgan in that team, that's a very, very efficient and a very, very effective forward, even one. Parik Mahoney's fantastic on freeze and all of that, but he's just not that player that you would need to double team, for example. And I think if they had that, and I don't see it in as a minute, I mean, a lot of the players have been tried around that before, and clearly Liam is trying for some new players at the minute. And I think that's why Woolley, the system of play is so important, because you cannot rely on two or three players, the likes of John McGrath, with very little possession, that can come away with, three or four points a match or 1-3 a match, which he regularly does, out of very little possession, in terms of efficiencies and shot efficiency and creativity and all of those things, they're on a completely different level. A method of play for Tipperary isn't as important as I see it for Waterford.
Yeah.
And that's why I didn't elucidate on the point, Willie, about when you mentioned the point originally about the way Waterford play. It is crucial to them. And look, would Limerick have won in All-Ireland or even got near it without the method that they implied for that and have implied since? I think it's crucial for Waterford. If they got that right, and I would think that, I think that's all Liam is going to be looking at, Michael Beavens. Michael Beavens is a very, very good coach. And you can bear in mind where Liam and Michael have come from. They've coached minor and under 21 for Tip. But generally speaking, minor and under 21, they're a very, very different game. It's exactly that. It's based nearly 15 on 15. You don't play a huge amount of tactical hurling because they're just not at that maturity level. And, if you see All-Ireland minors, you're very, very rarely going to see. Now, you may see this in the future, and maybe in the last couple of years, but certainly over a long number of years, it's very much 15 versus 15, you win your position and that. It's a very, very different game. I think that's the real challenge for Liam and for Michael here is looking at the the method to play to suit their team, but I think they need to find it very, very quickly.
Yeah, no, exactly. Just to be fair to Liam Cahill a bit, Jake Dillon is back. Kieran Bennett has been out. He's back. Desi Hutchinson's back for this weekend. Dara Fives, Austin Gleeson, Kevin Moran. Yeah. So this weekend we could see him with the team that he has in mind for the championship, and we might see something, you know, about what they're working on, because it is difficult when you have a patchwork team, and we know that Waterford don't have the squad that other teams have, so they're, you know, they're 6, 7, 8 outside their starting 15 wouldn't be as good as the Tip or the Limericks, for example.
I would agree with that. I mean, you know, Ozzie and some of those players they're just top drawer players.
Yeah, but they need to beef up their forward line, like
that's the issue I'm sort of looking for, and look, you may very well, you know, make a really, really good scoring forward out of a player like that, but Kevin Moran is also a fantastic half back, but even just looking at that, I mean, you know, how they used Ozzie in previous times in terms of coming from deep and running through to the defence, you know, you need to see something like that. They need to bring something different to their game here to use their strength when you don't have that real type of incisive, effective, efficient forward that I've said a minute ago.
Yeah, exactly. Liam Cahill has said we'll be going with real purpose next weekend. So there's a statement that, you know, this is it, pretty much. The shadow boxing's over. We'll be going with real purpose, and that's against Kilkenny. So we'll definitely see what Waterford are really made of this weekend. I presume you're going for Kilkenny. Is the smart money's there anyways. That's right.
I know, I think so, yeah.
I'm not afraid to put my neck on the line here.
No, it's in Nolan Park as well. And Brian won't allow anybody into Nolan Park and go away with a win. And I think I've seen some of the Kilkenny games, Woolley, and I thought they played very well in parts of that. You know, even with not full teams as such, although I'm not sure there's ever such a thing as not a full Kilkenny team. But I thought they played some good hurling. They're definitely changing their use of the ball. Is a little bit different. I think, you know, Brian obviously will want to win it and get another game, because I think he just needs to get two things. He needs to integrate the TJs and the Collins and this into the team and get everybody else playing around him and playing sort of to the one level. But he also needs to integrate maybe one or two new players that he's sort of looking at the minute. And of course, there's no better way of doing that than playing really testing matches, testing these players. Do they have the ability on the big day to be able to deliver the performance? And, you know, I think he's going to be, you know, Brian won't be saying that. He won't be vocal about that in terms of the way I think Liam has said it, that he's this is do or die. You probably won't hear Brian saying that. But mark my words, that dressing room will be no different. It will be do or die.
Brilliant stuff, Cheddar. Thanks very much. We'll be back on Monday. That's if the games go ahead. We'll keep updated as the day goes on. And we'll see what happens. We'll be back Monday if the games go ahead. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. Let it go.